Our guests today have collaborated on one of the most original novels of the year. Bill Witliff is a screenwriter and producer of such classics as Lonesome Dove, Perfect Storm, and Legends of the Fall. He's also a world-class photographer. And if you've read The Outpost, you've met the other guest, Jack Unruh. He's one of the best-known illustrators in wildlife in the world, I think, with work in Southern Living, National Geographic, Field & Stream, and many other magazines. We don't have time to list all of the accolades both of these gentlemen have, but come to find out, as my grandmother said, used to say, Jack is also a hell of a graphic novel illustrator, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. Bill and Jack wrote and illustrated an amazing new novel called The Devil's Backbone. Gentlemen, you have succeeded splendidly.
Thank you. Well, gee whiz. Okay.
that's a long wind up to a short pitch. Bill, let's start with you. After reading this book, I found myself reverting to the dialect I grew up with when I lived in the hill country of Texas near Brady, Texas.
Oh yeah, Lordy.
You have ruined all those speech lessons and radio announcer training I took as a young man with the pitch-perfect Texas dialect in this book. Now, I have to know, was this hard to keep this speech pattern consistent throughout the book?
No. I mean, what I did was just, you know, cut loose the pencil and whatever came out the end, that's what I went with. So, and the truth is, this is the way most of my people talk. So, you know, it wasn't like I was out there doing research on how people talk in the hill country.
Right, right. Did you grow up in the hill country?
I did, in Blanco.
Yeah. Oh, so that's perfect for the book then. That's a central area of the book.
Yeah, Blanco and Fisher Store and the actual Devil's Backbone, all of that area.
Wow. So, you know, I don't think I saw. I'm not quite finished with the book, although it's wonderful, and I'm actually. It's one of those kind of things where if you like something so much, you just give yourself a little ration of it every day. So I'm taking my time on it, but I don't think I've seen a phrase that my father and my grandfather used to use consistently, and it's the term pert near.
Yeah, pert near.
Is that in the book anywhere, or did I just miss that?
I don't think it is.
Well, we need to put that in the in the follow up. That needs to be in the next one.
I can work it in the next one. I really mean that. I just trusted what came out the end of the pencil, and that did not come out, or it would be in there.
Yeah.
So I was very careful trying not to force anything in there.
Yeah, you know, it seems to me like it'd be difficult to keep it consistent. You know, you're so used to writing good English, you've been trained and, you know, all kinds of schooling and professional training, and then to write with this dialect like you did so beautifully, that seems like a tough gig.
You know, what's really wonderful is if a character pops out on the paper and he or she is real enough to you, then they start talking and you just go with them. And that's what I did in this one.
Yeah, well, you did a great job.
I should
Jack,
say that's what they did in this.
Yeah, no, you let them do the talking. Jack, this, as I said in the beginning, this is as very close to a graphic novel. Your illustrations, you know, I love your work and have for years. Did you grow up reading comic books and want to be a comic book artist or anything, or how did you come up with this?
Well, first of all, it was Bill's idea. Put 25 illustrations in there, and I don't, you know, I've illustrated book covers. I've never illustrated until this year the inside of a book. And I, you know, was just flabbergasted when they said you're going to need 25 illustrations for the damn thing. So that really intrigued me because, you know, back in the days of NCYF and so forth, when they put a lot of illustrations in, like, The Last of the Mohicans or, you know, the pirate books and so forth.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so that was a big hook. And then when I got a chance to read it, and I just started making notes, and, Lordy, I came up with a bunch of possible drawings, and you know, we really had a big edit just to get it down to 25. Because he writes, you know, there's so much imagery and, you know, spooky stuff in there. I got a question. Can you use slang or, you know, what kind of words am I limited to here? Is this over the real air or is this?
No, this is, you can absolutely use real language. That's the advantage of
okay,
being.
Okay, well, I mean, he just wrote weird shit. And, you know, it was really intriguing and, you know, just brought out a lot of possible images. You know, some things, you know, you didn't have to draw literally. You know, I used fairly literal figures, and, you know, some of the people I was able to use, somebody said, well, where'd you get all these characters? And I said, well, just go look in the newspaper. You know, they got five most wanted criminals there, and they're just mugshots, and you can find some great faces. And Bill seemed to have a lot of those for friends. So, you know,
our family.
They kept showing. Yeah,
family.
So anyway,
family members,
you know,
yeah.
It was a pure joy to work on, and you know, just because of you know, all the possibilities that Bill offered in his writing, and you know, that doesn't come along very often. Well, it never came along before.
No, I was going to say, I bet it's never come along like this. But,
no,
Bill,
and I couldn't handle another one if anybody tried, because you know, I had a year to do them and other stuff too. So you know, there was a ton of work had to be done in a relatively short period of time. But it was a joy to do, and what's worked out since then has been really fun to meet. You know, I just met Bill a couple of weeks ago. We've talked on the phone a lot, but I never saw his smiley face until a couple of weeks ago. So
wow. Wow. Bill, without giving away the twists and turns of the plot, because I hate when people do that, of The Devil's Backbone, can you give us just a brief synopsis of the plot and what goes on here and, you know, where...
Not really.
Not really?
Because I don't think of it. I don't think of it that way. But essentially, a boy whose name is Papa, and he has a very mean horse trader daddy. The daddy abuses a horse. His mother runs off because of that. And in the book is essentially about Papa, the boy, trying to find his mother and what happened to her because she disappears. And along the way meets a bunch of characters who just knocked on my door to be in the book, essentially. And I made the same deal with all of them, which was, you know, you can come in and be a part of this story so long as you're not boring. But if you get boring, the next guy through the door is going to shoot you, hang you, or run you out of town. And for me, that's pretty much what happened. I tried very hard not to think and plot it and so on. I just trusted. I trusted that if I had the itch, I also had the ability to scratch. And as silly as that might sound, that's exactly how I wrote it. So I didn't plot it. I mean, certainly there is a plot. Every story is a plot. But I just said, let's go.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I mean, it took me a while. It took me a few pages to realize that the person narrating the story was a child, or actually the person narrating the story is the child of Papa. So this is the next generation that comes along is sharing the story, and that's kind of an interesting perspective.
Yeah, and that was, again, nothing that I planned out. It's just when I started writing, then, you know, the different voices would come in, and, you know, I thought, well, this guy's telling the story, but who is he telling that story to? And then that guy became the guy who's telling the story that Papa tells. So, but again, I didn't, you know, truly, Jack can attest to this. I mean, I didn't try to think this thing. I just trusted it and went with it. And and there it is.
Well, it is a tour de force, I think. Not just because from that area, but Devil's Backbone is what it's called, and it's published by the University of Texas Press, which is I think quite a coup as well. That it's a beautifully done book. I mean, all the accoutrements that go into something that's really a collectible book is there. Jack, was this a different kind of illustration assignment than you've ever done? You kind of alluded to that it was, you've done a cover, but you've never really done a kind of graphic novel approach, have you?
No, I never have. I've never done one project that had that many drawings that were related. And so, you know, that was a true difference. You know, most of the things you do or I do now are in magazines, and, you know, you do an opener, maybe a quarter page or half page spread, and then that's the end of the thing, and it goes off into Never Never Land. So this, you know, this had continuity, and some of that was good and some of it was bad, because you got to figure out how to draw a guy's same head from a little bit of a different angle, and I've never been too slow at that. The other good thing was I was able to use my grandson as a model and for him to be Papa, so that was handy. And his
price was
right.
That's who that is. That's great.
Yeah.
I know of that little kid. I knew him many years ago, but he's not very, how old is he?
I think he's 9 or 10 now.
So that's about the right age for the character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At least I think it was. I think I asked Bill one time. He said, "Oh, it didn't matter."
he can't be 40.
Yeah, can't be 40. That's the criteria. Can't be 40. Well, these characters are stunning, Bill. I mean, did you do any? I mean, aside from checking the family album, did you do any deep research on the setting or the history of the 1880s in Texas?
I'm from that part of the country, and before me, my people lived in that part of the country, and my people were big on sitting around the supper table telling stories, and so that was all just a natural part of my upbringing and those places. And you know, there's Fisher Hall is prominent in the story, and that's where my family had and still has our family reunions, you know, going back well over 100 years. So, you know, there's nothing really thought out. It just, you know, I that business of, and I know it sounds kind of silly, but I just figured, well, if I have the itch to write this, I'll also have the ability to scratch that itch. And, you know, and so I just went with it.
Yeah, you know, you have been in the movie business for many years, and most people know you as the screenwriter for Lonesome Dove.
Yeah. It's not a business, though.
No, it's not a business. Oh, it's not an industry. It's a calling or something.
Whatever preachers say that they're after.
It's a calling.
It's a nightmare.
This story has a making, I think. Maybe it's just me because I love the story, but of a critic-loving blockbuster. I mean, do you write, or do you think there's some potential for a movie from this?
You know, this is the first volume of a trilogy.
Oh,
wow. So I'm writing two more. I'm on the second one now, and then there will be a third. So I don't even want to think about the possibility of doing a series or you know, a movie of this. I mean, I like it. I like to see Jack's picture, you know. And incidentally, Jack, while ago, or you said, I guess, Jack, when you took this assignment, you know, the truth is it wasn't an assignment. Jack could not have done this for any reason other than he simply wanted to, because there certainly was no money in it. And so it was just Jack jumped in for the same reason I did, I guess, which was we like these stories.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't an assignment in the ordinary sense of that word. Do you think, Jack?
Yeah. I mean, other than I made an agreement that I'd have to do it and arrive at it probably at the end of the time. But it, you know, it was just done really because it was something different. You know, I've never done anything like that. You know, and I could afford to take the time to do it. And it was fun. Gee whiz, it was a lot of fun.
Who found who? Did you find Jack, or Jack did you find Bill?
Oh no.
What happened was Dave Hamrick, who's the director of the University of Texas Press, when he and I started talking about publishing this book and the next two as well, then you know, I said, "Boy, I would love for this to be illustrated, you know, like you know, late 1800s book would have been illustrated," and he readily agreed. So I called a mutual friend of Jack and mine, DJ Spout, who's a wonderful graphic designer here in Austin. And instantly he said, well, you should talk to Jack Unruh. So he called Jack first and told him about my novel. And anyway, and then I talked to Jack and then sent him a copy of the manuscript. And then, you know, Jack and I got to be telephone friends. And, you know, Jack said, yeah. And then away we went. And then we had this wonderful back and forth, you know, relationship. Jack would send me prelims and we'd talk about a little bit and which ones to illustrate and which ones Jack wanted to illustrate. You know, it was just a nice, easy, fun venture.
And sometimes when I'd throw him a curve, he would adjust his writing to fit the curve. So that was really cool.
Oh my goodness! Oh, that's fascinating. Like, give me an example of in the book that you had.
Well,
I think I
made this Indian with a blind eye, and Bill said, "Well, he didn't have a blind eye." I said, "Well, he does now."
Yeah, and I said, "Okay." So you're leading, it's an Indian with one blind eye.
Man, I love this. I love this. That's great. Well, Jack, I've said this a dozen times, but you have the best job in the world, dude. You spend a whole bunch of time in the outdoors, fishing and hunting and camping, and people pay you to illustrate what you see. Besides this book, what have you been up to?
Well, let's see, South Dakota in October and Kansas just a couple of weeks ago, bird hunting, and just finished a project for Garden and Gun, which dealt with the starting of a bone fishing camp down off the Florida coast, the first of the bone fishing stuff back in the late 50s. And I've forgotten the guy who wrote the damn thing. He had a French name. But anyway, just in general, drawing a lot of pictures.
Yeah. Now, the feature that we did on you about a year ago, I still get email. Once in a while, I get an email from somebody saying, what a great set of work that is. So we're very proud to have you both back in the magazine again, because it's a pleasure. Bill, in terms of the rest of the things that you do with your time every day, besides photography, writing, producing, you founded the Whitliff Collection at Texas State University in San Marcos. Do you have day-to-day work on that, or what's that all about?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that my wife Sally and I founded. There are two collections, and my wife Sally and I founded those. And I really thought, you know, that we would found them and get them started, and then once a year or so they'd pull us out and we'd get a little shine. But the truth is, you know, you get so addicted to the whole idea of those collections, or we do, so that no, we're involved, not on a daily basis. Except maybe by telephone, but yeah, we're really involved, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How about this?
And you know, I guess we're probably more proud of having founded those collections than anything, because mm-hmm. you know those things. I mean, you know, they go forward through the generations if you do them right when you start, and in addition to collecting cultural artifacts of the region. I mean, the other purpose is that they be places of inspiration where somebody with the itch to create but maybe not yet the courage can go and see how others struggle to find just the right word, just the right sentence to express themselves. And I know, I mean, for example, I always wanted to be a writer, but I thought books came from across great oceans. If I'd walk into a place like at Texas State, you know, and seen how Dobie and John Graves and Cormac MacArthur and Larry McMurtry and all those guys had struggled with, you know, then I would say, well, I can do that. I can endure through that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we're really proud of it.
Yeah, I'm proud of it for you. And I met your wife many years ago when both of you had Encino Press.
Oh wow! Yeah,
and I was doing the morning show on an album rock station in Austin, and I had a daily talk show, and she and you were both on there at one time, and she's fun to chat with. Please tell her hello for me.
I will absolutely do it.
Well, gentlemen, this is Go ahead.
No, that's fine.
I was just going to say that to announce the name of the book again, because this is a we hope to have this in the next month or so in the magazine. But this is if you happen to hear the podcast, it's a great Christmas gift, particularly anybody who likes the Old West or likes a great story. It's just a beauty, the Devil's Backbone, and it's written by Bill Whitliffe and illustrated by Jack Unruh, and I really appreciate you guys taking the time to be with me.
Thank you, Art.
Thanks, Art. Really appreciate the interest. We'll see you later, bud.
Absolutely, guys. Take care of yourselves.
Okay. Adios.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.